Okay, it's after 4 o'clock. Let's go ahead and get the meeting started. We need to approve, a motion to approve the minutes of December the 19th, 2018. Is there a motion or is there any additions, alterations, or?
Hey! Meeting started.
John, do you have, what do you think? Do you have any changes?
I have no changes.
I move approval of the minutes of the December 19th, 2018 Loveland Utilities Commission meeting as written.
Second.
Okay, is there any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Informational item, water supply update. Is there any questions or comments for Ryan on that? You might just make a comment. We got a little moisture last week, but still needs a little bit more.
Nothing.
Getting a little nervous.
Yeah.
Not yet, but still. Our basin is doing really well, the South Park basin.
Mm-hmm. Could be better.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to citizens' reports. Do any citizens want to report? I already asked. Okay, no citizen report. Consent agenda, item number 2 and 3. Staff has reviewed and approved these items. Is there anybody who has any questions about them?
I have a question on consent agenda item 3.
Okay, we'll pull that off. Is there, how about item 2? Okay, on number 2.
Yes.
All right. Okay, Leslie, you want to? Joe said that you had
here's some photos. You can show you what it is.
It's pretty important.
Yes, it's a really critical piece of infrastructure for the city of Loveland. There's 3 transmission mains, a 48, a 36, and a 20-inch transmission main that leave the water treatment plant and all go through this vault. And we call it the modulating valve vault because all the water mains come through here. And then they go through this modulating valve. That right there is the old 36-inch line that has 1962 gate valves. So they're 36-inch gate valves. The operator's on top of the valve, so it's up in the air about 8 to 10 feet. So we want the whole, one of the reasons for this project is to get rid of those 2 valves and replace them with some smaller butterfly valves. And have the operator easily accessible. The next photo is, that is actually the modulating valve. And so that's where all the water comes through there. The water treatment plant controls it. When we replace those 2 valves we just saw, we're going to make an additional modulating valve. So we'll have 2, so we'll have more flexibility. And then the last part, which was the reason why we're actually doing this project, these are the really old infrastructure. Those valves are attached to a wood stave water main that is no longer in service. And it's connected to our 12-inch main, so we're just going to mothball that disconnected, run a new 12-inch line, and fill that all up with backfill. So that is a problem waiting to happen. If any of those valves gave away, the whole vault would fill up with water, and we'd have a real problem.
So none of this involves actual modifications to your vault structure?
There is a little bit. We found out during the design of this that the actual slab for the structure is only 6 inches thick, so we have to pour, the structural engineers for our consultants said that that's not adequate. They're not sure even how it's staying where it is. And so we need to cut 2 openings to remove the valve, and so we have to put another 6-inch slab on top of that, down into it, just to increase the strength.
6 inches thick with rebar?
Yes, with rebar. Yes. So they'll make that a total of 12 inches thick.
At one time, I can't remember how far back, on the south side of Highway 34 there, they were doing some excavation. They actually dug up some wooden water lines. Are any of those still in use in that area?
I don't think so. There is many, and that's why close to where that is. They did take out some old wood water lines around that vault years ago.
Yeah, I remember seeing those.
Where this is right by Devil's Backbone. There used to be some elevated, some ground storage tanks there.
And that's where I think I saw them.
And this is all underground where the old tank used to be?
Correct. Right when you go into turn into Hidden Valley, on the left-hand side of that hill is where it is.
How do you get down to this vault? Is there stairs?
They actually put steps in it years ago. Before, it used to be just a manhole. You had to climb down there on the ladder. So they did make some improvements for safety, so there's a stairwell.
All right.
How long has the tank been going there?
I don't know. You know how long?
About 10 years in the last, plus or minus.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. It hadn't been that long.
Those were safety active, too, how they had to access there, so.
And this picture is well lit. Is there...
That was a flashlight, I'm sure. It's really dark back there.
I bet.
There's probably some snakes and some mouse in there, but...
So we really did that 6 contracts, is that...
Yes.
Qualified?
Mm-hmm.
So that's unusual.
We were surprised how many bidders we did have.
So it is slowing down?
Slowing down. I guess it might be slowing down.
When will the work happen?
We have the work as soon as we can get a contract with them to start doing this work, because we're going to have some of it done before the irrigation season starts. So that'll be going done by April 1st. And then they have to take a break and then come back in October to finish the work.
That particular location is a single point of flow for the entire city?
Yes. All the water comes through there.
I have one other question. So I noticed Connell was next to the highest, and you do a bunch of work with Connell. Like I said, it's not unusual.
It is. This isn't their forte. They're really good at doing line work, putting water and sewers in. This is more of a specialized, it's big valving, and it's in a vault. They're really good at production. They can throw in some water mains and some sewer like no one else can.
That's good.
Is this going to have an effect on our water quality?
No, it shouldn't. They'll have more flexibility in getting some of the water to our home.
I'm talking about during the construction of this.
Oh, no, it shouldn't. We have, it's in phased operation, so you will never have any water not accessible to the city. We're going to have them do one section first where we have the line stops in the 20-inch before we actually do any work near the water valve.
I have a motion to approve.
I move to award the contract for the modulated valve vault modifications to RN Civil Construction in an amount not to exceed $677,400, which includes base bid plus an alternative, and to authorize the city manager to execute the contract on behalf of the city.
Second.
Is there any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay. Go on to number three. John, what was your question on three?
My main concern on this one was the recommendation and the authorization of the director to sign. Nothing was made specifically about regarding this water and this water only, unless this is going to be permanent change to the way business is being done. If it is, I think this needs to be more specific as to deal with the water from this particular 12 CBT units.
Would it help if we included the reference to attachment A in the recommendation?
No. Anything that would make it more specific.
So attachment A is the cancellation of the temporary use permit as a process that comes before converting them to a permanent Section 131 contract. So we got the temporary use permits issued last year in about August when they were transferred. And those 12 units came from Sylvandale Ranch in the process of entering into a long-term augmentation plan with them. They gave us 12 units of CPT in exchange. We provided them 6 acre feet of fully consumable, reusable water that they could credit towards meeting their evaporative completions on some ponds and other augmentation credit they needed. So the process with Northern is if you get them before like March, before they can change them to the Section 131 contract, they'll issue the temporary use permits. And that allows you to still use them as early enough in the water year or the irrigation season before they meet in March to do the Section 131 contract approvals. So the attachment A is dissolving or canceling the temporary use permit. Attachment B is a process of converting those to the Section 131 contract, which obligates the city to every year pay for the assessments on those new shares as part of our water portfolio with Northern CDT.
Okay, understand. This is just to sign application to Section 131 contracts and execute the documents required to effectuate such contract. That could be this contract for 131, or it could be another one a year from now, or 10 years from now, or whatever, if you read what this says as far as the recommendation goes.
I don't know if this will help, but these Section 131 contracts are specific to certain units. So anytime we do a transfer of any number of units, whatever they are, at the end of the year, Northern, in their consideration at the board, will put all of those into a 131 contract basically for that year.
Okay.
And so that's what you have for that year, and that's what this is referring to. And anything we want to do next year will be a new 131 contract. The 131 refers to the Water Conservancy Act. It's a paragraph in there, so it's following the guidelines in that section of the law.
Okay.
And maybe I think I understand your question is this isn't just a blanket motion for every future CBT unit. This is these 12 units. And I would, I guess, suggest, including that language in the motion. Because the language in the recommended motion is just a suggestion, and I think it could be more specific. We're only asking for that recommendation to City Council for these particular units. That's all that City Council would also be taking action on.
So. Could this be based on a year like 2018, 2019?
I mean, I think anytime we're going to sign these contracts for new units that are coming into our portfolio, we're going to come to LUC and we're going to go to City Council. So I don't think there's any need to do a blanket 2018 approval. Historically, when we have acquired CBT units, we come and get signatory authority to enter into those long-term IGAs with Northern.
Okay, I'm going to state a motion, and then we can tweak it if we need to, if I don't get the reference totally correct. So I move to recommend that City Council adopt a resolution authorizing the directors of the Department of Water and Power, the director of the Department of Water and Power, to sign the application for the Section 131 contract relative to 12 acre foot units of Colorado Big Thompson Project Water, and execute any documents required to effectuate such contract.
Okay, any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay. Okay, we can move on to the regular agenda now. And item number 4, I own shares in Southside Dish Company, so I'm going to abstain from. Did you want me to leave?
No, I don't think that's necessary.
Okay, all right. Okay, so Dan, why don't you take over?
But no hand signals or face me.
Okay, so item number 4, we'll look forward to a presentation.
Not much of a presentation. I'm Nathan Alburn. I haven't actually been in front of you guys since I was here a little over a year ago when I first got hired, but obviously seen you guys at many of these meetings. So this is a fairly straightforward item. I don't have any fancy slides, but essentially there was an agreement that was brought to LUC back in October. You can see that description here, October 17th, and where you looked at the agreement is between O'Hara and between the City of Loveland dissolving the O'Hara agreement And part of that agreement was that three of their shares, there's multiple shares within this agreement, but three of the shares specifically would be brought into the City Loveland Water Bank. And so that's what we have here before us. There's specific shares, certificate 2846, which is, comprises of two shares, and 2706, which comprises of one share. And we're just simply asking for the LUC to recommend bringing those into the water bank. The only reason why this isn't on consent was because Gary is share owner.
I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
So I was a little confused about the agreement that says that the recommendation is to replace in the water bank full credit without conditions or restrictions. And then down below it says we're going to do it pursuant to the section of the code that typically applies to the water bank. But are they going to sign the water bank agreement that we have everyone else sign? It usually has the provision that says if we take it through water court and it gets rejected, then we have the ability to return.
Yeah, they still have the, they still will have a water bank agreement, and it'll still have the same provisions. Essentially, when we said we wouldn't have any qualifications, one, we wouldn't reduce the percentage until that point. Like, some of the shares have been brought into the water bank, we only give them 50% credit or something of that nature. These, we're bringing in at 100% credit.
Thanks, that answers the question.
Okay. Any other questions?
Other discussion?
I make a motion we accept into the City of Loveland Water Bank the following three shares of Southside. Two Southside shares associated with Southside stock certificate number 2846, and one Southside share associated with Southside stock certificate 2706.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
And abstention.
Thank you.
Okay.
Item number five, fiber management intergovernmental agreement with Fiber Power. Let's see, Brianna, you want to
snuck past you.
So we have brought this issue before the board a couple of times last year. As you may recall, Platte River Power Authority over the summer, well, I guess that's been earlier than that, had decided that they wanted to put the ownership of the local fiber rings back with the cities in which they are housed. So we're excluding the long hauls that go between the cities. This is the fiber that connects our substations to each other, which was what we're calling the local rings. In September, Platte River passed a resolution that basically agreed to transfer those assets back to the community owners. So that's Longmont, which had already taken over their fiber ring back in the late 90s, Fort Collins, SS Park, and Loveland. And they, in December, they passed an IGA language to actually accomplish that transfer of assets. So what we had taken this last week to our Loveland Communication Advisory Board as well for consideration and recommendation to City Council to accept the transfer of ownership back to Loveland for our local ring and the IGA that goes with that. So all of that information was contained in your packet, and we covered what fiber was a lot over the summer and what those local rings are really referring to when Paul Crosby had visited with us from Platte River. But if you guys have any questions about that. Platte River will continue to maintain and own the net, 12 strands of the 144 that's being transferred over to us, and will continue to maintain this backbone network on our behalf, and that's true for the other communities as well. So this is actually a really good deal for the community. So we'll have this fiber that we'll be able to own and maintain, but we'll have some assistance in making sure that that gets maintained appropriately as we go forward.
Does this also go to the new board?
We did. We took it to them last week, and they unanimously recommended that City Council assign or approve this IGA. Yes.
I think so. Oh, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I was going to say, Randy, I think that we would have
requested proceeding with this IGA irrespective of whether the municipal fiber enterprise was in existence going forward, not going forward. It is a very, very good deal for all four of the owner cities.
So this is the network that our power SCADA system runs off of. We also have city network traffic on this. We also have a couple of dark fiber leases with the county, LEDA, 911 services, and a couple of other large institutions like healthcare facilities in town. So those will stay in effect until those get renegotiated. Platte River has obviously been maintaining those and will continue to help us maintain those until we take full responsibility of those back. So it'll be kind of a soft transition as we move forward. Yes?
Are there any non-governmental entities, private entities, so to speak, that are leasing
Yes.
some of this fiber from the mm-hmm. city?
Absolutely. We're actually fairly lucky. Only about half of our fiber has been dedicated, so we still have 50-ish strands on the local ring that will be available for lease or other uses going forward. So it's some of the other communities have had higher lease rates than us.
Whose balance sheet is it on?
Well, we're not really sure which fund it will go into, but power and communications are one enterprise. So we're still working out all those details with our finance group on how they're going to allocate that. But more to come on that, I suppose, as we get into budget next year.
Yeah, if you get right or wrong, it's not costing us any money.
It's not costing us any money. They feel that it's fully depreciated at this point, so they are transferring.
Oh, they are fully depreciated. Mm-hmm. How long has it been in there?
98.
30 years?
22.
20 years. What's the physical?
We don't know yet on fiber. We depreciate at 20 years. But until we start to see degradation or problems with the fiber, it will continue to operate. It's just like our other utility assets and the water and wastewater and power side. Until we start to see reliability issues, we'll continue to operate that equipment long past its depreciation period.
Who's been maintaining or surveying it now? Us or Platte
River? Platte River.
And they're still going to?
That is correct. They will continue to maintain that. That's part of that IGA that's attached. And most of the details are contained in the IGA. One of the items that's in there is that there will be a technical committee that will be established. We already have one of those on our engineering and operations side for the transmission lines and the substations, the power lines and things like that. So we'll have a similar entity that will be kind of governing how that gets put together. And we've already been meeting as the four cities, and that's where these technical specs that are included in the IGA were developed and came from.
If I ask you what the unused capacity is, explain to me what your answer is.
Well, it depends because there's different, if you're looking at just fiber counts, we could give you one answer, but you can send a lot more information across one fiber than if you're using a wave modulating technology where you have multiple frequencies essentially of light that go across than if you connect individuals to individual strands. So it's not a simple, straightforward answer, but it provides a lot of capacity for us now and going into the future. And whether or not this is used as part of the new broadband utility directly, or if it's continues to just expand lease capability for dark fiber leases in our community, either way, it's a benefit for the city to maintain this. Yes?
In terms of the installation infrastructure, how is the fiber contained underground?
It is in conduit. Uh-huh. And then it comes into, everything's smaller in fiber because fiber is a lot smaller, but essentially a handhole. Which are called vaults on the fiber side, but they're handholds, so they vary in size between, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet in diameter, depending on where they are in the system, where they come in, and that's, you have an access point, and they go on. But everything's in conduit.
Joe mentioned this would come to the LUC regardless of the fiber utility, but given that the fiber utility is, do I say it's in place or going to be in place?
It is in place.
Okay. Is this somehow going to be an asset of power, water, or sewer? If not, why are we acting on it?
So it will be an asset of the power and communications utility.
Okay.
So the difference is that there's a couple of different funds, kind of like on the water side where there's water and raw water is a different fund, but they're all underwater. So we're talking about different funds in this regard. So on power, there's we have our general fund, we have our plant investment fund, and this is another separate fund. So they're going to act as a separate utility, but they're really one enterprise.
Okay.
So it does affect electric. Plus, this is the SCADA system for the electric utility, so it does impact electric in that regard.
Impact in that we're inheriting an asset and potential future liability?
Less of a liability because Platte River is going to continue to maintain this asset because they are required to, for security reasons, they have to make sure that this fiber system continues to be reliable and maintainable for transmission because they use it for the transmission system as well. So that's where we're going to be owning the fiber and getting the benefit of the fiber, but they're going to continue to maintain it to make sure that it's to their specs and their reliability standards.
I heard you mention that before, but maybe I missed the time. They're going to maintain it perpetually?
Mm-hmm. They're going to be setting aside a separate fund in Platte River, and Joe can speak more to this on how this works as a board member, but they will, you know, just like they do currently now where they maintain this network, they're going to continue to maintain that and coordinate with the cities. In case we need to get into that vault, they want to make sure that they know that we're accessing that fiber and say, okay, something happened, so that they can make sure that the loop isn't broken, right? So you don't want to have too many people working on the network all at once. They're going to be kind of a coordinating council as well for reliability purposes.
And then maybe it just hasn't been ironed out yet, but just for my understanding, I thought I understood the new utility would be its own enterprise and have its own board, and so I'm maybe not quite getting what you're talking about. If there is overlap between the funding side of it, which seems more of a bookkeeping thing than more.
Well,
of a...
they are going to be operationally separate in most ways. There's going to be, just like on power, water, and wastewater, there's a lot of overlap in some of the ancillary staff. So Jim Lee's group, our utility applications group, customer relations, there's a lot of overlap in that regard, and there may still be some overlap in some of the areas of design and operations. Those are still being flushed out, but they will be operationally separate, but they are still one enterprise. So, and the enterprise was actually changed in February of last year, so it is a power communications utility with two entities underneath it, so power communications.
So,
it's kind of
our future may be we're doing joint board recommendations to council.
I would
on things like this, maybe I think less so, just because they will be operationally more separate.
I think it would be a very limited subset. I mean, I think this is a very almost a one-off. If we get to the point at some point in the future where they're not talking about the ring but the long haul, I think that would be a joint. But for the most part, this is going to be a good divergent point.
Clearly, I like making motions. I'm just trying to eliminate one of them.
Well, you know, LCAP was really excited. I think this was their second motion that they got to make. So they were, as a new board, they're not quite as, yep, absolutely. But we felt that because of the direct relationship with both communications and power, that it was appropriate to take it to both boards for consideration before it goes to City Council.
I move to recommend that City Council approve a resolution authorizing the City Manager to execute an intergovernmental agreement for fiber management between Loveland and Platte River Power Authority, approving the City Manager's acceptance of Platte River Power Authority's transfer to the City of Loveland the 132 strands of excess fiber and associated assets located within the Loveland local fiber optic loop.
Second.
Okay, is there any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? All right. Okay, on number six now, I think, Joe, this is not a motion we're going to make on
that. That's correct, and I'll go ahead and explain that. Thank you very much, Gary.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Joe Bernoski, Director of Water and Power. First, I'd like to thank Joe Wilson from Platte River Power Authority for being here this afternoon. And, Joe, if I so much as make a misstatement,
or use an incorrect term or word, please feel free to throw something at me and interrupt me and correct me in real time if you would please. As Gary said, I spoke with some attorneys this morning, and we did not have an actual copy of the revised organic contract. In other words, one with the changes in it, with the strikeouts, with the red lines, and so on. What we have is a presentation, a PowerPoint presentation with bullets. I cannot ask this commission, nor could I ask the city council, to approve changes in a presentation with bullets. So what I'm here today, this is more like a study session item. What I'm seeking this afternoon then is a sense of the commission, and that's what this revised page is in front of you. It's a slightly revised version of what is in your packet, with the recommendation being a discussion to get a sense of the commission on the proposed changes to the organic contract. We will have a copy of that next month. We will bring that back before the commission for actual approval before going on to the city council. So my apologies for the confusion, but again, our esteemed attorney said, you cannot approve a PowerPoint presentation. I think those are words. Those are your exact words, weren't they, Derek? I believe. Okay. What are the two documents that relate to our association with the Platte River Power Association? There are two. One is the organic contract, and one is the power supply agreement. The organic contract is not a contract between the owner cities and Platte River Power Authority. It is a contract between the four owner cities forming the PRPA. So there are four signatories to it: Loveland, Estes Park, Longmont, and Fort Collins. PRPA is not a party to that. It was last renewed in 2010 through 2050, and I'll explain why we have such long extensions in the next slide. There are individual power supply agreements with each of the owner cities, and Platte River defines specifically the relationship, because everybody has different facilities. The relationship at each substation may be different. We operate slightly different than Longmont and Estes Park, so these are individual contracts between ourselves and PRPA. And again, much like the organic contract, it was renewed in 2010 through 2050. So why renew now? Why are we interested in extending a contract that currently exists through 2050? Bonds go out many years, so it provides some flexibility in future bond issues, and it provides flexibility of the recent purchases of renewable power, of the last wind contract and the forthcoming solar contract. Platte River is not purchasing physicality. They're not buying a wind turbine. They are not buying a solar panel. What they are engaged in is power purchase agreements. In other words, those facilities are constructed and maintained by a third party, and Platte River simply purchases power at an agreed upon rate from them. So having these long-term contracts allows some flexibility in negotiating future power purchase agreement terms. So it's a good thing in both extent. Yes, sir.
Would it be okay to ask questions?
Sure.
Can you go back a slide so that I understood you to say the organic contract sort of created PRPA, whereas the power supply agreements are sort of the...
Our relationship with PRPA from a physical standpoint.
And now and going forward.
Yes.
If the organic contract were to have died, does that dissolve PRPA? Or is it just simply it created it and the power supply agreements keep it viable going in the future?
Mr. Wilson?
If we approach 2050 and we have not renewed the agreement, parties can opt out on, I believe, a 6-month notice, provided all the bonds have been paid off at that point.
Okay.
So effectively, it is a sort of off-ramp.
Good. Okay. Interesting. Thanks.
The content, especially in the power supply agreement, is being updated because right now, over the last several years and forthcoming, the electric power industry is changing rapidly from a generation standpoint, from a transmission standpoint, and it will eventually change at the distribution level. And what these will allow us is to acknowledge those changes that are here and those that are forthcoming in the industry, and allow us to be a little bit more flexible in terms of how we deal with it. Most importantly, and this has been explained a number of times, it was explained last year when the zero net carbon presentation was given, it is imperative, and frankly, we will not be able to get much higher in terms of renewables. We have got to get into an organized market. And what these changes allow us to do is conform to what's going to be required in an organized market. And finally, conform to some descriptions of transmission facilities. So the organic contract there, first of all, there's one real change, the proposed change, which is extension. Originally, the extension was proposed to 2075. One of the other owner cities suggested a shorter term to 2060, and PRPA staff believes that's they're agreeable to that because they believe that that will still provide the flexibility necessary. Because we would change that date at the beginning of the organic contract, there is a brief paragraph explaining essentially the history of when this was originally formed, when they were modified, and so on. So that the language there has to be changed as well if we're going to change that one date. That's it. That is the only proposed change to the organic contract. Now, the PSAs, and again, remember, these are the individual contracts between the owner cities and PRPA. Substantive changes conform with the same 2060 extension. Importantly, want to expand the exceptions to the all requirements obligation to allow additional and more flexible third-party solar and other power generation requirements. We know that distributed generation is becoming more popular. This gives PRPA and each owner city more flexibility in how that is addressed. For example, and the reason that's changed is because the bond council, and the people who buy the bonds for organizations like PRPA acknowledge that the industry is changing, and that for an entity such as PRPA to say no, you cannot have more than 1% of your peak load as self-generation, they understand that that's probably not a realistic request these days. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, when your only option was a major G&T supplier, that's why that was in. Am I correct in that, Joe, basically?
Exactly right. You know, that provision has been in the agreement since we originally entered them in 1975. And basically, it's a security for the debt that Platte River entered into to create the resources to serve them.
Basically said, we know you've got these customers, we know they're going to want power, you can supply the power, you'll get the revenue, and you can repay the bonds. We know they're allowing more flexibility now. And I want to point out, too, the PRPA was very flexible in this respect anyway. When the city's hydro facility in the canyon was destroyed in the 2013 flood, it was rated at approximately 900 kilowatts, okay, less than a megawatt of power. And I can tell you, unfortunately, and I love hydro, but boy, it was a dog. It really was. I mean, you can put a nameplate on anything and call it something, but what it really puts out is completely different. We received FEMA money and put up city money to build the 3-megawatt Foothill solar facility. That exceeds the 1% of our peak load. Our peak load last summer was 163.54 megawatts on July the 10th. That was our peak. Okay, so that means in theory we should only be able to put in 1.64 megawatts of ancillary power. PRPA had the flexibility to allow us to put 3 megawatts in. So we've always had that flexibility. This is more or less codifying it.
That's correct. We took that issue to the board, and the board agreed that under these circumstances, Lubbock could put in some generation beyond that was initially allowed under the agreement.
The third bullet point is a very technical one, and it has to do primarily with if we do enter into an organized market, the commonplace practice of an organized market is to meter from the high side of the substation transformers rather than the low side. So this changes what point the power will be metered, before or after, and we will now be metering on the high side.
We're not engineers. Could you explain that?
Sure. Transformers transform. And I know Brianna and Christine are going to be sitting back here laughing, aren't you? Because you're going to watch a Mecki explain double E stuff. This is going to be pretty good, too. Feel free to jump in just like I asked Joe to, okay? Transformers transform. You take a high voltage and you transform it to a lower voltage. Because nothing is 100% efficient, there are losses from the transmission voltage that comes in here to the distribution voltage that goes out there. There are always losses, primarily in heat, I would say, is the majority. Heat, just simple efficiency losses. So if I measure power, if I've got my meter, where do I meter the power? Do I meter it here where it comes in at line, at the transmission line voltage, or do I meter it down here where it goes out to distribution? What you're saying is, I'm going to have to account for these losses a little bit differently. Those costs are going to be spread out over the entire system, and it's very trivial. It more has to do with conforming to the practices of a market.
But changing it to the top, and I'm sorry, I'm getting too far. Changing it to top, don't you lose what you actually have available to use?
And that cost is going to be spread out over all of the entities. Yes, you're right. Yes. Because you're going to measure one volt, you're going to be measure one power here, another here, and there are losses here. But that will be spread across the entire system. Minor. As we go forward, Brianna mentioned technical committees. We already have a technical committee. I think this just codifies it, that as additional technologies come to the fore, that we'll have regular meetings. And it also addresses changes in how we physically interface with PRPA at the substations. Those are jointly owned facilities, and they do a lot. In fact, I got a notification today, automatic notification, that PRPA was conducting work at one of our substations. So, in essence, these are some very, very basic and very, I would say, non-substantive, in my opinion, changes to the organic contract. I think the real driver here is the term. And again, that's to allow more flexibility in financing and bonding. The timeline was initial changes back over the summer. They have discussed this at both board meetings and with the utility director meetings. Dan.
I'm sorry, backing up to the PSA, just to confirm, these changes are basically uniform through all four communities?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The language in each PSA will be somewhat different, but that's not language that's being proposed to be changed, and that has to do with the physicality of each community and their particular distribution system. I don't know, we the utility directors meet before you systems. The four owner cities utilities directors meet on a monthly basis, so we discuss this. We will be bringing it back before you for approval next month, and then we'll bring it to City Council the month following, not on the 19th. PRPA does continue to meet with representatives of other owner cities, and as far as the term goes, so that may be modified. Are we going to be on 2060, Joe, do you think?
Well, I think that all of the communities are agreeable with 2060.
Okay.
Yes, sir. These slides were done before they made the change to the item.
Okay, so it doesn't mean the 16th of January you're going to bring it back here.
Our next meeting is February 20th.
Okay, February 20th, and then one of the March meetings at City Council will bring that back. And again, my apologies for that confusion. But as I said, the attorneys got a hold of me early this morning and explained to me.
Yeah, leave it to the attorneys to mess it up.
I got to have a foil, Derek. Come on now.
It wasn't me.
It was not actually Derek. Derek is a substitute foil. It was another attorney in our city attorney's office. So what I'm looking for, gentlemen and lady, is a sense of the commission. Again, as staff, we are recommending that these edits and modifications be approved. And we will bring that back for formal approval with the document. You have the organic contract and PSA as printed, currently existed, is in your packet. We will bring back a red line in the next packet.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Questions?
I have a question for Joe. Just a rough feel, if there were a weighted vote taken, would Fort Collins have sufficient weighted vote to override the other three municipalities, or require at least one other municipality?
Randy?
That's an interesting question, and it the answer can change. There is a provision, as you know, for a weighted vote at the Platte River Board. There has never been a request for a weighted vote, so it's never occurred. It would only occur if there was a tie vote amongst the board members, and there are 8 board members, so there is a mathematical possibility that there could be a tie vote. There has never been one. If that was to occur, say at the next board meeting, Fort Collins would have 46% of the vote. But it would only take one other community to scale. Right now, the fastest growing community is Loveland. And so it's certainly possible that 46 that Fort Collins now holds may diminish over time.
Everybody will be courting Estes Park, is that?
Estes Park is not made of that particular issue.
Don't let Ruben know that.
What is the weight based on?
It's based on the history of purchases from the organization.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Did you ask for a sense?
Yes. How do you feel about this? Is there any objections to any of you?
It all seems like a good thing, mostly sort of looking out to the future and ensuring we're kind of structurally aligned to adapt to changing circumstances and extend contracts into the future and have surety. I'm curious if the maybe PRPA board or the other communities have had, concerns or thoughts about the language, and have we gotten to this place based on compromise or tweaking, or is it generally, yeah, this all seems good, let's get down to it?
I think, and Joe, please correct me if I'm wrong here, I think that the only point where there was some dissension was the term, and that Fort Collins wanted a shorter term from 75 to 2060. Other than that, I don't recall any substantive proposals or edits or modifications.
You're correct there, but we are fairly early in the process. We haven't gone before the Fort Collins Energy Board, and they may have some issues that we're unaware of at this point. It always seems to be a lengthy process because you're going to 4 different communities, and in this instance, Loveland is the first. So I've not heard anything, but that doesn't mean we may not encounter some other pushback.
And was Fort Collins' feedback on the term just because they wanted to ensure that at some point in the future they might have flexibility for that off-ramp they were talking about?
I think that's part of it. The history of renewals, the agreement was originally entered into in 1975, and it ran through 2015. And we didn't renew it again until 1998. and we reached a point at which, you know, we hadn't issued any bonds for a period of time, and the renewals just fell through the cracks. So in 98, we renewed it to 2040. I kind of wanted us to get on a 10-year rotation after that point in time. But that was my thought in 2010, the first time I went through this. 10 years comes by pretty damn quick these days. And the industry is changing so quickly, I thought that if we were to push the renewal date out longer, but as Joe mentioned, have a process by which we go before the communities every other year and talk about new distributed technologies and new business models, so we can kind of conform the agreement incrementally over time. That made more sense. But I think Fort Collins felt that, well, let's stick with the 10 years, because it certainly gives an opportunity for the communities to make sure their fielder voices are being heard.
Thank you.
Do these tend to put us more in line with the non-caveats that have been talked about for zero carbon by making these changes?
Well, certainly the two changes, I think, will help us move forward in terms of, you know, this 100% renewable by 2030 goal. One is preparing ourselves for an organized market, and the other is, you know, creating a climate that is more conducive to solar development.
Anyone else? So I think we're in the right direction. Does everybody agree?
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Thank Chair.
You.
Yep.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to commission and council reports. I was going to suggest that we talk about exploring some goals that Sean said that or indicated that we might want to explore. But let's have a council report first, and then we'll
allow me real short. The last 2 weeks of December, council didn't meet because of the way the hell holidays fell, and then I've missed the last two meetings. So.
I'll fill in one for you.
Please fill in. So,
because of timing and because of the way the holidays fell and the board meeting of the LUC meeting in December versus today, we were compelled to bring a request for supplemental appropriation directly to the City Council without intervention by or without review by LUC because of timing. We felt it was important to get that pushed as quickly as possible. And that's the Wilson Avenue rehabilitation replacement project. And I have to commend, I see Tanner in the background, and he's been really one of the driving forces behind that, worked very, very closely with Connell. And they are, as Brianna mentioned, that their wheelhouse is linear. Or I'm sorry, it was Leslie mentioned it. Their wheelhouse is linear, and they are laying pipe like you can't believe. They're doing a great job. And at the same time, our staff has been dealing with a lot of, so that's, we felt that it was important to get that in front of council so we could get that supplemental appropriation. So
but I believe you gave us a preview of that at our last LUC meeting when you were in the throes of all of this calamity.
We were, and I could look up when the meeting was, we were sitting there in I believe it was after this meeting, when we were talking about going in for a supplemental appropriation for the entire project sometime early this year, 2019. And we were in that meeting down the hall, and Andy Tenbrack got a phone call that there had been another leak.
I think it was the morning of our...
Was that that morning?
Yes.
And that's when we shifted and said, no, we got to do this right now.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. I declared an emergency. Steve Adams concurred with that. And the first opportunity we had to get before council was last night, and so we did. So, thank you. And
Joe.
Oh, we've got some photos. Let's see some photos.
Oh, Courtney.
There you go. This is ductile iron pipe, 12-inch diameter. installed approximately 1975, right, Tanner?
Yep, close enough.
Close enough? Got some more?
1975 AD?
1975.
AD.
AD.
Not BC.
No. This is, there's a pretty good sized hole. I think that's the famous one with the glove next to it, the one on the left.
The one on the right.